it's Memorial Day weekend, and between the barbecues and the parties, we've got a lot of business to cover. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Hey, it's great to be back with you. Gee, I hope somebody's actually listening to us today. Maybe they're listening to us while they set up the barbecue in the backyard.
Well, you know, that's probably not a bad idea, is to encourage that a little bit. I'd have to say, Chuck, I'm not even sure I'll be listening to this on Saturday. No, I'll try.
You know, you know how I do it? This is very interesting. To show you that I'm sort of a techno geek.
Yeah, I was going to say embrace it. Embrace
now,
the geek.
I listen on my cell phone.
Okay.
I have a little program called Tuned In.
Okay.
And Tuned In, you can download. WLRY is on Tuned In.
Oh, okay. So instead of going through iHeartMedia and all of that other garbage.
Yeah, that's right.
Which, frankly, I've never actually gotten to work very well for me. I barely can utilize that thing. So, and of course, as you're a techno geek, I'm a technological Luddite. So
yeah. So I have a DeWalt workshop radio that has an auxiliary input, and by the way, it acts as an extension cord as well.
Oh, that's
so
handy.
What I do is I plug in the recharger into the bottom, so I don't
burn the battery up.
And then I hook the aux cable into the audio out, and voila, I can hear anything. In fact, I usually listen to jazz music. My wife and I have found a jazz station that we absolutely loved on Tuned In. The first time we heard it, the music was great, and I started listening to the announcements, and they're in some language that I don't recognize.
Right, which is the reason why I would say that we're not encouraging our listeners to tune this station out to go listen to jazz.
No.
But well, on the off hours,
yeah, whatever.
Have at it.
Yeah, but we did some research into it, and I listened to it, and it sounded Spanish almost, but the accent was wrong, and I said it also sounded a little Slavic, the way certain things were, like they pronounced FM, like that, and I'm like, okay, what language is this? Well, we fooled around with it and thought maybe it was Romanian, because Romanian is a Latin-based language, so it has a lot of similarities to Italian, and a lot of people don't know that Romanian is the only Romance language in the Slavic regions.
Yeah, that's right.
And it is very Italian-sounding. And in fact, if you look at names, they all end in vowels, I's and O's and that kind of thing, like an Italian name. Anyway, we started doing some research on this station. Well, it was Portuguese.
I was going to guess Portugal.
It was Portuguese, and which we figured out after we'd fooled around with it for a while. So we listened to this really great. They do a lot of standards, a lot of jazz standards, big band stuff, that kind of thing. And we love that station. So we listen to that a lot when we're working in the yard on the old DeWalt work radio, which you crank that up and we can hear it in a good part of the backyard. So
now you see, I'd love to be your neighbor, because I'd love to hear jazz or something of that nature cranking in somebody's backyard rather than some of the things I hear in some people's
Whitesnake and Whitesnake and Guns N' Roses and that kind of stuff, usually what you get.
I don't know if I have that much problem with those either, but
It's bad modern country.
Exactly. See, you nailed it.
Not that's classical exactly country. It's bad modern country.
No, because I'm a big fan of classical
country. Yeah, exactly.
But I cannot stand the modern stuff. So, but you know, that's neither here nor there. And actually, that's not getting us where we need to go today.
No, that's not.
But that's all right, because again, it's Memorial Day weekend.
That's
so
right.
Maybe we just don't go very much of anywhere. But if you do go anywhere this weekend, folks, what you should do is to remember what Memorial Day is all about. And it's not about the hot dogs, and it's not about getting your yard caught up. It's not about, you know, most everything else that we tend to wrap into this quote-unquote holiday weekend. We call it Memorial Day for a reason. We're memorializing. We are remembering those who sacrificed their lives and, in many cases, their family structure in order to serve and protect us in times of combat and war. And then those who lost their lives, whether through that combat and war or who have then passed on since serving. And, you know, Chuck, I think that honestly, in our culture today, that probably affects just about everybody in the country, because I think at one time or the other, we've got people in our families who served.
Everybody knows somebody who has served.
Mm-hmm.
My nephews were just here for my daughter's wedding, which was last weekend. We talked about that. Yes, did we get rained on a little bit? And you know what? It didn't make a dime's worth of difference. Everybody had a great time, but my nephews were here from out west. They're great young men. I love them dearly. They're hard workers. They're driving their mother nuts because they're both approaching, or I think one is 30 and the other one is approaching 30, and they're not married yet. And she's like, I'm never going to get a grandchild. She's very jealous of my wife, her sister. She says, I'm never going to get a grandchild. Yeah, you'll get one. They'll get with the picture here pretty quick. They're both fine-looking young men, so if you are interested in moving to Colorado or New Mexico, we can set you up with a picture. Because they're ones.
I didn't realize we were turning this into a dating service. No,
yeah, Chuck and Barry's dating service.
Matchmaker.
but in any case, one of my nephews served in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually in a I think he was in the Signal Corps, and well, when he came out, he now climbs towers for, I think, Verizon.
Okay.
He took his skill and turned it into something. So
now, since we talked about classic country, now you're talking about this. The song Wichita Lineman is now going through my head.
By the way, I love that song. That is there's a reason that's classic.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it was a song that actually told a story.
And I'm trying to remember who wrote it. I think it was Hoyt Axton.
Hoyt Axton wrote it, and Glenn Campbell sang it.
Yeah. And
sang it, yes.
Campbell's...
My country's coming out of me.
There
sung
you go.
It.
Yeah. It done sung it.
Done sung it there.
Yeah. It's southeastern Ohio coming out.
That's it.
Guess what? We talk the same way in central Ohio.
Well,
so
there you go.
No difference. The accent's maybe not quite as pronounced.
I is a public school graduate.
I see it. Yeah. In any case, though, yeah, one of my nephews served, and I think he was in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
He was either in Iraq, I can't remember which, but he was deployed for a time.
Mm-hmm.
So we all know somebody. If you know the history of Memorial Day, do you know the history of Memorial Day?
You know what? I don't know if I've ever heard it thoroughly.
No. Okay, it's a Civil War.
It was an honor. It was commemorated. Started after the Civil War.
Yeah, it started out. It was strictly for Civil War dead. Mm-hmm. They didn't throw in the War of 1812 or the Mexican War or the Revolutionary War.
War for American Independence.
It was strictly to honor the dead on both sides from the Civil War. And
mm-hmm.
The name Civil War, don't like it, but everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say it.
Right. So. Let's put it this way. The mm-hmm. The late unpleasantness, the war between the states, the War of Northern Aggression, if you happen to be from my part of the South.
There's a great discussion on that. I'm going to get back to Memorial Day for
sure.
a minute. There is a thing that you can get from Mises Media, M-I-S-E-S, Mises
mm-hmm.
Media, on YouTube. And I'm going to recommend it. It's called the Historical Controversies Series by a guy named Chris Calton, C-A-L-T-O-N. He does all kinds of historical controversies. He started out, the first one I didn't watch, it was on the drug war.
Okay.
The one I'm really interested in is the lead up to, and they just got into, I don't know how many we are into the series. I forget how many broadcasts or podcasts, but they just got into the bombardment of Fort Sumter. All the stuff beforehand has been the things that led up to the Civil War. And he does a long discussion on what to call it. And he goes, when I talk about this thing, it's going to be called the Civil War. It's not because it's a good name. It's because it's the name that everybody recognizes.
Right, exactly.
And he talked about what was wrong with the War of Northern Aggression, what was wrong with the war between the states. He says, it's not between the states. It's between a country that separated itself and immediately created a new nation. Yes. Did South Carolina lead the way? Yes, they did. So if they had been attacked, it would have been a war between the states. But it wasn't. Because he said New York and Connecticut didn't go to war with each other. He said the United States of America and the Confederate States of America went to war against one another.
This is true.
So he goes through all the various names, and he says, we're just going to call it the Civil War. So I'm going to do the same thing.
Okay, that worked.
It's a neutral position,
mm-hmm.
if you will. Memorial Day started out after the Civil War to honor the dead of the Civil War. And it was honored that way. The next big, really big war we got involved in, which wasn't huge by any stretch of the imagination, was the Spanish-American War.
Right.
1898. And Memorial Day began to grow and be used as of the honoring of all war dead about then, after World War One, and the loss of, I'm trying to think how many soldiers America lost. It was a lot. 200,000?
I don't know the numbers offhand.
Well, remember, we were only actively involved in combat in World War One from early 1917. We actually didn't declare war until April of 1917, and U.S. soldiers as a unit did not see combat until about a year later. Well, people say, why? Because we didn't have a standing army.
True, exactly, because we were actually following the Constitution at that point.
Exactly. So you can argue all you want about whether we should have been there or not. The fact is, it took us a year to get an army ready to fight in that war.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, the French and the British fought tooth and toenail to get Black Jack Pershing, who was the general in charge of the American armies, to allow American soldiers to basically become British and French replacements. And Pershing said, no, I've seen the way you guys handled your armies. We're not going to do it that way.
Exactly.
You're not plugging holes that you've created in your own line with our guys.
With our guys, yeah, that's right. So basically what they were asking for was for the U.S. forces to just become a mercenary force.
Exactly. That's what they wanted. And Pershing said, nope, they're going to fight as a cohesive American unit or they're not going to fight at all. He did allow some of that to go on. But after the First World War and however many dead there were there, that really took off to recognize Memorial Day as a the honoring of all American war mm-hmm. dead. So that's why we did. Memorial Day is not simply the mark when kids are getting out of school and you can put the boat in the water.
And the pool opens.
Yeah, and the pool opens. Does that all happen? Yeah, because it's a convenient marker. But the fact is, that's not why you celebrate Memorial Day.
Right, that's true.
We should pay honor to those who died. And
well, it should be somewhat of a sober reflection for
exactly.
us of the things that led to us getting into those type of conflicts where those individuals were killed, lost their lives, or sacrificed the better parts of themselves for defending our way of life and defending our belief systems, whatever those might have been at each one of those war junctures. But, you know, we really have to start thinking about that a little bit more because I think, Chuck, we hallmark holiday too many things.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And I use that phrase because there are holidays that we quote unquote observe that are basically hallmark holidays, and that's
sure.
what I mean.
Sweetest day.
They were basically brought forward so that the candy makers, the florists, and the card sellers could all make some more money.
Yeah, like Father's Day. I need another necktie. Good. Father's Day's coming up.
Hey, you know what? I just got to thinking about that. Maybe I didn't know. I just got myself another necktie. I'm good. So, no, but then you have legitimate national observances. And that's the other thing we have to remember, too. This is a purely American idea. Do other countries observe and memorialize their war dead? Sure, they do.
Yeah, they do.
But they do things like in Russia, May Day. You know,
well,
or
their big day is for the World War II is they may do May 8th.
Yeah.
Which is VE Day here.
Yeah.
We don't celebrate VE Day anymore.
No.
There's a reason for that. That memory has faded away. And it really, you know, people don't. What's VE Day and VJ Day? Well, people, you say VE Day, people go, huh? Victory in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was the point at which it was obvious and announced that the Axis powers had completely collapsed
and surrendered,
yeah.
And actually ordered the end of hostilities.
Yes.
And VJ Day is same thing.
Victory in Japan,
which
yes.
is August 13th, I think,
mm-hmm.
Because it was right after the Nagasaki bomb got dropped.
Right.
The Japanese said, okay. We're serious this time. Unconditional surrender. I think the they may do May 8th. I'm trying to remember what the Russian, but they do heavy honoring of Russian war dead. Mm-hmm. They're called the Fallen Comrades. And for instance, if you've ever heard of the giant concrete statue in
Red Square?
In Volgograd.
Oh, in Volgograd, okay.
That is to commemorate the heroes of, well, at the time it was called Stalingrad. So it's the heroes of Stalingrad. But it's a giant statue of Mother Russia. And it's reinforced concrete. And it's hollow. Mm-hmm. You can go up inside. I've known people who've seen the thing, and they're sort of like, it's
the Russian version of Statue of Liberty.
It makes the Statue of Liberty look like
a toy.
It's huge. Yeah. It's huge. It's not.
It's taking on the attributes of the Colossus at Rhodes.
but the Russians are very, very serious about their war memorializations.
Yeah, they are.
They call that the Great War, not World War One, because not so great things happened during World War One for them. But they call it the Great War, World War Two, because so many Russians died. I mean, millions.
Yes,
millions died. We talk about how, you know, if you watch movies and TV, who won World War Two? America did, right? Woohoo!
No.
America
not
won
right.
World War II. No, oh, no. The Russians sacrificed everything to defeat. Believe me, if we had invaded in 1943, we'd have gotten killed in Europe because the Russians had not yet decimated the German war machine.
No, that's true.
And hadn't had battles like Kursk yet. If you know anything about Kursk, why the Russians do the same thing and celebrate their war dead. Kursk, 500 tank battle, maybe bigger. You think about how many tanks that is. Normally a tank is not, you don't do tank duels. I mean, that's not what they're for. What they're for is portable artillery. And they move fast, and you get them in there, and they're infantry support, essentially.
Right.
Well, not in that battle. It was tank versus tank. And any infantry who got in the way learned to get out of the way real fast.
No doubt. No doubt.
So, but that being said, there are other countries. The British also honor their... similarly to us, we have Veterans Day. Okay, where did Veterans Day start?
Civil War, wasn't it?
Nope.
No, that one was
World War One.
Yes.
The 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month.
That's right.
Strictly speaking, Veterans Day, because we already had a Memorial Day.
True.
Otherwise, they would have called it Memorial Day. But instead, it became Veterans Day. Now, I think for a while, they called it Armistice Day.
Armistice Day is another
when
name for
when it started. But it's November 11th. Now, one of the things that's always bugged me about this federal holiday shifting around is it helps take away the meaning from these holidays.
True.
Same thing with, President's Day. You pick a date somewhere in between Lincoln's and Washington's birthday and celebrate that. No, I don't like that.
Maybe this is going to be an unpopular statement. I don't like the idea of celebrating any individual president's birthday.
Yeah, it's a problem. Washington, I can grasp. Washington was the guy who held the country together when it looked like it was all going to split up, even after the... If Washington hadn't been in the job... there wouldn't be a United States as we know it. It probably would have split into. Would that
possibly
necessarily be a bad thing?
Who knows?
That's a matter for discussion. We love our country. We live in it, and George Washington is a heroic figure, a flawed one.
Yes.
He's not perfect and he didn't throw a dollar a mile across the Potomac.
And he didn't chop down a cherry tree and say, I cannot tell a lie.
Thank you, Parson Weems.
That's right. Yeah, that was Parson Mason Weems who wrote this hagiographic, a fantastical account of the sainthood of George Washington.
Yeah. But the British and the French also celebrate the sacrifices of the war dead in... especially in World War One,
mm-hmm.
and you know, World War II as well. So all the countries that were involved, I don't know what Germany does. I'll be quite honest. I think that they sort of...
Is there like a collective national guilt so
yeah,
they stay away from it?
I think they may shrink away from it a little bit. I'm sure they honor their war dead, though, in some type of national fashion.
Yeah, they have to be careful with that, though, because then they end up getting pegged for honoring Hitler and the Nazi inner circle.
Yeah, or the Kaiser.
Or the Kaiser, or yeah, yes.
And yeah, and
Germany's military track record is a very interesting one. It's very impressive from a technical standpoint. It's not so impressive from a personal standpoint.
Yeah, it's if you there was no Germany before about 1860.
Well, it was Prussia. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was Prussia and about 30 other
little
Balkanized states.
Yeah.
It was the remnants of the old Holy Roman Empire, yeah. Which was a group of loosely confederated principalities.
Saxe Gotha and all yeah. that and all those other.
And in fact, Bismarck. Oh, wow, we're really going deep into history. Bismarck in the 1870s had a series of three wars to consolidate Germany and to keep Austria from having control. They didn't necessarily not want to be confederated with Austria. Mm-hmm. Well, Austria wanted to be the big boss. And Bismarck said, no, we're going to make Prussia the big boss. Because he was Prussian. He was a very proud Prussian. And basically three wars. He fought the, if I remember right, it was the war with Austria, war with over Schleswig and Holstein.
Yes, Schleswig.
Denmark. Woohoo! They beat the Danes. Wow! And stole some territory from them, which they then dug the Kiel Canal in, which is the canal that the Navy continues to use on the north edge of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And then they fought the Franco-Prussian War,
uh-huh.
which the French were humiliated. Napoleon III was captured inside the fortress of Metz. So that being said, again, there's a lot of interesting intrigue, and it wasn't like they just simply marched on people who weren't belligerent back. There were other countries who were more than willing. They thought they could thump on Prussia.
Uh-huh.
Well, what that did was... It's a lot more complex than this, but basically a lot of the principalities basically came in and said, he said, you know, these little kings of Bavaria and all that thing, and he goes, I don't want your kingdom, I'm going to become an emperor, and you just swear fealty to me. So a lot of the kings remained kings under the emperor.
Yes.
But he was the emperor, which means that they all swore loyalty
right.
to him. So
like the Holy
that's
Roman
essentially
emperor,
what happened there. That's why Franco-Prussia happened, and literally speaking, that's why World War One happened. You can't look at these wars as isolated incidents. All kinds of stuff went on and went on and went on, and that goes back, some of that goes back to the collapse of the Holy Roman Empire was after Napoleon thumped everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Prussia, Austria, and again, the French are very proud of their Napoleonic heritage.
Yes, they are. As well as we're you know, very proud of our heritage as well.
And, yeah.
And, you know, that's the reason why we have parades and we have observances and wreath layings and things of that nature that all surround this particular holiday. And it is. I mean, it's a nationally called day of observance.
Yeah.
Unlike so many of the others, the Hallmark ones. And, you know, I think that in one sense, we've also made it that we've kind of broadened the scope. So Memorial Day is usually almost, you would call it Decoration Day. Because
exactly.
everybody goes and puts flowers on the graves of all their family members. It's like, well, that's great, but that's not what the day is actually supposed to be about. You're supposed to be memorializing a certain group or certain classes of individuals who basically served their country in times of war.
Right.
So... And not that there's anything necessarily wrong with it, but as you see over time, like you said, we forgot VE and VJ Day completely.
Not completely, but it's...
Well, I mean, pretty much it's out of the lexicon for most people.
Yeah.
Unless you're our age and you got a little gray in your beard and your hair. But for most people, it's not even in the lexicon. I don't even think they teach VE Day and VJ Day in the history books in schools anymore. They barely teach American history, basic American history,
well,
much less this.
I can remember being told that the United Nations won World War II.
Well, okay, sure. And how many? How big of a military force does the United Nations have?
Well, that's a bait and switch.
Sure,
were the Allies called that? Yeah, they were. But was it the same organization that was founded in San Francisco in 1948? I think
47 or 48. Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Right. No, so let's try to remember. I mean, as much as, you know, if you want to go and put a wreath on grandma's grave, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. But what I'm saying is don't forget the grave of the private or of the seaman who may be a couple, three spaces down from grandma, who maybe nobody is remembering.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. I love it with our church, Chuck. I walk out in the back and I have a grave markers from the War of 1812, War Between the States, World War One, and I think we've got at least one World War II, maybe a Korean War veteran in our cemetery. So I can take my kids out there and walk around and give them some, you know, examples, and of course, you know, you've got dates and what companies they were in,
yeah,
and things of that nature. It's very fascinating to do that, and actually I'm going to do that this weekend. My oldest son turns 19 on Sunday, so, you know, it's like, okay, you know, and he's registered, you know, Selective Service. And so it's like, okay, son, you know, let's take a look at some of this stuff because, you know, these people, if you look and you see some dates where these guys died pretty young, and it's like, that's a cost of war. It's a cost of freedom. But the bigger cost is for us not remembering and not honoring those sacrifices. Because if it wasn't for the people who are now sitting quietly in their graves, we wouldn't be resting quietly in our homes. We wouldn't have the we wouldn't be able to run to the Walmart to pick up the picnic cover and the hot dogs and the watermelon.
That's right.
And the charcoal for the grill. We wouldn't come home to, you know, being able to just grill out in our backyard or call your neighbors up or your friends to come over, because we could be living in an environment much like many countries that lost battles and wars in.
Okay. Think about Central Europe.
Yes.
After World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What happened to them? Well, they switched bosses.
Yes, they did.
From the 30s and the 40s, when Hitler marched through and essentially established quote-unquote republics.
Yes.
That were essentially satellites of Nazi Germany, or simply absorbed them. He was more about absorbing the land and making it part of Greater Germany.
Right.
Which is why he did the ethnic cleansing thing, so the Germans, you know, the superior Germans could go in and populate those areas.
And not be diluted by the substandard population.
Keep enough around for slave labor and that kind of thing. They switched bosses to the Russians.
Yes, they did.
Now, the Russians took a different approach. They understood that the West wouldn't stand for mere absorption of the lands. So what they did was they created satellite republics.
Right.
Where ostensibly people elected these governments and continued to prop up these petty dictators, Ceausescu, some of the guys in Czechoslovakia, and which, you know, of course no longer exists, but at the time, Czechoslovakia, Poland, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, the Balkans, although the Balkans were a little different in that Tito sort of broke the dictator who ended up in charge of the mm-hmm. Yugoslavia, sort of broke with Stalin,
mm-hmm, yes.
Ran his own show. And then there was Albania, which was run by this sort of, was a very isolated sort of Marxist Islam devotee named Enver Hoxha, who was sort of mysterious, and nobody in the West really understood what was going on there until after he died. And they sort of came out of that whole Marxist mindset as much as they could. I mean, once it's inculcated, it's hard to get back out.
Yes.
Yeah, they did it that way. So they had these satellites. So that's why America did its best to support places like West Germany At which at the time, there are people alive now who have no idea that Germany was split into East and West.
Yeah, pretty much anybody who was born after 1989 doesn't realize that there was a wall.
There was a wall, and there was a demarcation between East Germany and West Germany. And also, there used to be a nation called Czechoslovakia.
Yes, there used to be.
Yeah.
And before it became
the Czech Republic
and Bosnia and Herzegovina and
Slovakia.
Yes.
The Slovak Republic.
Yes.
So they split in two. The Czechs and the Slovaks got along just fine for a while. When they wanted independence from what used to be the Austrian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they got independence from the Austrian Empire, they lived together until Hitler, and then under Stalin and the Russians. And then later they said, hey, we don't like you very much. Once they got independence, we don't like you very much. We want to be separate. You guys are kind of lording it over us.
That's
I think it was the Czechs who were, who had more money and influence. And the Slovaks said, no. And, split apart. So there's a lot of things that that kids born after 80, and you think about that, they're 30 years old now, or 29.
Yeah.
So the world has changed drastically since when you and I were kids, because it didn't look like the Soviet Iron Curtain was ever going to crack.
Ever going to come down, that's right.
We were sure that East Germany would remain East Germany, and that Czechoslovakia would stay inside. I mean, because Czechoslovakia tried to get out in 1968. You remember, you old enough to remember the Russian invasion in 1968?
Well, I was born in 1968, so I didn't quite remember it.
Oh, I remember it well, watching on the news, the Soviet tanks rolling into Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I had a teacher whose name was very Hungarian. And her husband was an escapee from Hungary in 1956 when they revolted.
Uh-huh.
And Russia crushed those very cruelly. Russia crushed those attempts to get out from under the Iron Curtain. But in 89, things had deteriorated to the point in the Soviet Union. It's like they couldn't maintain the facade. The beauty of the Western system is that what did we do to them? We spent them into oblivion.
And I think we're about to do so again. You know, I kind of want to roll this around because you left that open right there just perfectly. You and I have been talking offline for a little while now about this whole thing about the investigation by the special counsel,
exactly,
Robert Mueller, regarding the quote-unquote Russian interference in American elections. Well, a new wrinkle just developed here heading into Memorial Day weekend that it doesn't look like so much like it was the Russians who might have been trying to do something. It was the Ukrainians. Now, why would that be very interesting, Chuck?
Well, okay. In 2014,
yes,
the Ukrainians broke away from Russia.
From the Russian Federation.
They
that's right.
voted to become an autonomous republic.
Right, and they did that. Now, there was a reason why that wasn't received warmly by Russia, and that was because of a certain seaport.
Oh, of course. And that would have been on the in Crimea.
In Crimea, that's right.
Now, what's interesting about that? Crimea voted to break away from Ukraine.
That's right.
And go with Russia.
You're right.
Now, what did the Ukrainians do? The Ukrainians went a little nuts and said, hey, you can't do that. Hey, you can't break away from
Ukraine. You can't do what we just did.
Yeah, you can't do what we just did. So they went to war against
the Crimeans.
The Crimeans, yeah. And the Russians used that as an excuse
to roll tanks
to
into
roll
Crimea.
Tanks into Ukraine.
Into Ukraine. That's right.
I've always said that if you want to be separate from the country you're in, okay, that's fine. You should be allowed to leave. But the Crimea is a very strategic piece of land.
Yes, it is.
Because I can remember talking about this in a Constitution class that we taught.
Because it's the only
okay,
direct port to the Black Sea that Russia has.
It's the closest thing to a warm water port.
Warm water seaport, yeah.
It is in the Black Sea. And the Black Sea, if you know anything, it's situated, if you know where the Bosporus and the Dardanelles are, It goes from the Mediterranean past Turkey and Greece and between them, past the Balkans and up into this, what looks like on a map, a big lake, but it's a really, really, really big
small,
lake.
Yeah, it's small. It's a small ocean. It literally is a sea.
It's actually a sea. It's a very odd, actually a very odd body of water. But that being said, it's an important body of water to both nations because it has Sebastopol is the big port, and if you know anything about European history, there was a big war fought there in the 1850s between Turkey, England, France, and Russia.
Right.
And the allies were Turkey, England, and France
against Russia.
And against Russia because what the Russians were planning on doing, and this had been a Russian goal for many, 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 many years, was to take Constantinople back.
Right, which is now Istanbul.
Istanbul, yeah. It used to be called Constantinople. It's now Istanbul. That is the city right there where Asia and
Europe
are split basically. Are split by a waterway.
Yeah, they're split by a waterway.
A little like an inlet that goes between the Mediterranean and the Black Sea, which tells you why it's so strategically important. And Russia wanted it because they wanted a year-round warm water port, which they don't have.
It's really hard to be launching into the North Sea all the time because you have to wait till pack ice breaks before you can launch your ship.
And that's why, believe it or not, that's why what we now call St. Petersburg has been a number of names. It was Petersburg, it was Petrograd, Petersburg, just Petersburg, and it has also been Leningrad.
Mm-hmm.
If you know anything about the Russian Revolution, it was called Leningrad, but Peter the Great built it, and he built it because he was a man who loved the sea, and he wanted to build a decent Russian navy.
Mm-hmm.
See, none of these things, all these wars and maneuverings and things, all go back to something.
It's true,
and they always go back to something else, and that's why all that's important, and that's why. If you have to write a paper about what was the Crimean War about in 10 words or less, warm water port for the Russians.
Only if they're studying European history in college would I think they ever have to write a paper on that. But
okay,
get your point.
why were the British against that?
I think the British were against that because with the advent of surface to air missiles and ballistics.
That.
Oh, well, you're looking way before that.
Yeah. Why in the Crimean War were the British on the side of the Turks?
Because they still controlled everything south of Turkey, didn't they?
Well, no, that didn't come to World War One.
Oh, that was World War One. Okay.
No, it was about the trade route to India.
Oh, yes.
The Russians could easily have threatened because where did it come from? It went through the Mediterranean. And it went through the Suez Canal after it was built in the 1850s.
We're the only radio program I think people have to have a world map on hand in order to follow.
But it threatened their Indian trade. And India was there's a reason why India was called to Britain the jewel in the crown.
Yes.
And there was a reason for that. It was a huge source of their money.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all the natural resources. Yeah. The trade, the things that you could bring out of Asia through India in order to get to Britain.
And the things you could sell there.
That's right.
You had 500 million people or 300 million people at the time.
Bicycles and umbrellas. You know,
you could sell all kinds of stuff. Even though it was a very poor country, it was rich in the things that the Brits took the raw materials and turned into something else.
Like bicycles, because that was a big seller to India.
Oh, absolutely. but we're kind of way off the mark, but we're not.
No, we're rolling back around. It's good.
But yeah, you had brought up Mueller and the whole...
Right, because now it's looking like it wasn't so much Russian interference, but that the folks who tried to set up this meeting with some of the Trump campaign people, including Donald Jr. and others, were Ukrainian operatives, not Russian operatives, which means they were playing the other side of the coin.
Well, the real issue here is that most Americans couldn't tell you the difference.
Wouldn't have any clue what the difference
is. And I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not trying to insult you.
No, and it's not. I mean, but the point is, if I showed you three pictures, one's a Russian, one's a Crimean, one's a Ukrainian, and they're all not famous people, you wouldn't be able to tell which.
Culturally very similar. It depends on where in Russia you are, because Russia, this is a country that covers 12 time zones. So,
yes.
I mean, it
literally... Closer to the area.
Yeah, it literally goes from the Baltic Sea to the Pacific Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
It goes further east than China.
Yes.
In fact, the joke, if you recall, during the McCain-Palin campaign, was that Sarah Palin supposedly said, the joke was, I can see Russia from my house.
Right. She wasn't kidding.
She also didn't say that. That was a Tina Fey quote. But the fact is, there is a spot in Russia where the Russia and Alaska are separated by about 150 miles, I think.
Yeah, the Bering Straits, right?
In the Bering Straits.
Yeah.
There's a piece of land that pops out, and then over to Kamchatka, the Kamchatka Peninsula, and over there, northern Siberia.
And just so our listeners understand, Chuck is not sitting here with a map right now. This is all from memory. Okay, this guy has a voluminous memory for geography and wars and maps and geopolitical strategies. I kind of sit here in awe sometimes listening to him talk about this stuff. He's got that down like I've got all the players at the State House.
Yeah, well, people ask me why we were so worried about Russia, and I said, do you realize how easy it would be?
Yes.
Now, you couldn't do it. You couldn't do it in December or January, but during the spring months, the Japanese proved you could essentially invade and hold the Aleutians.
Yes, they did.
Now, they didn't invade and hold the whole thing, but they took two strategic islands,
mm-hmm.
and it turned out to be basically a bridge too far for them, but it was a bridge too far for us, too, because we weren't willing to dedicate the resources to take them back.
That's the reason why our government starts getting a little wiggy when Russia starts talking about going up to the North Pole and reclaiming it, and maybe trying to claim back Alaska because of Seward's folly.
Well, let me tell you something. I took Russian in college, and on my last term, my fourth term, I had a Russian teacher. She was an exchange and had come in and was teaching our Russian class. So one day, she and I were conversing in Russian, which I couldn't do at this point. she and I were conversing about it, and she started talking about the fact that Alaska wasn't purchased. It was only leased. And I said, I've read the treaty. That's a purchase.
Yeah, it is.
Now, that's what they're telling them over there. It was only a lease. They don't really own it, and the lease is about to expire, and blah blah blah. We want it back. Okay. Well, the Russians had colonies as far south as Northern California at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not unfamiliar with American territory. Yeah, they moved in and moved down the coast and had little enclaves. That has obviously since disappeared, but believe it or not, as late as the early 20th century, there were still communities that spoke Russian in California.
Yes, there were. Absolutely. Well, there are still communities that speak Russian in New York, too.
Well, that's a little different.
That's a little different.
That's a slightly different kind of colonization.
Yeah, that's true.
But no, there were, this is a geopolitical thing.
Yes.
And, I'm struck. You're talking about this whole Russia question. What I'm beginning to notice, and I noticed months ago, and you and I talked about this, and there wasn't really enough hook there to hang a hat on yet.
Right.
But I said, this doesn't look Russian to me. This looks like British intelligence.
Yes, you did. And you, I think we even said it on air a couple of times.
We might have. But I said, this looks like MI6.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what?
It's MI6.
But it's not MI6 by itself.
So, no. There was a whole string of like four or five different agencies.
It's CIA as well.
CIA, and MI6.
I'm going to guess, and we'll never find this out, but it's also a National Security Agency.
Yeah, probably so.
Because James Clapper, who was the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, was in on it up to his nose.
Mm-hmm. So basically, these various individuals in these various agencies in the Obama administration,
yes,
basically are colluding together to try to crash the campaign of a political rival.
Yeah, they essentially tried to crash his campaign.
Do you realize how many federal laws that will violate?
Well, the question here is, had the Trump campaign done it to Hillary...
Oh, he'd already be in prison.
He'd be in prison.
He'd be
now.
In prison by now.
But now, what's happening? Well, to give you the lowdown on this, someone from the opposite side of the spectrum had a conversation with a journalist, and he said, "Why aren't you reporting on these things that are coming out like in buckets?" And he said, "They don't fit the narrative." This mainstream media guy said they don't fit the narrative, and there's only room on the plate for one narrative.
Don't confuse me with the facts. I already have my mind made up.
Bingo. So this is a collaborative effort between your average FBI agent. No. FBI leadership. Yes.
Peter Strzok, higher up from him.
McCabe,
Rosenblatt, probably. Definitely Comey. Yes.
And all kinds of people surrounding them. The Attorney General of the United States at the time.
Yes, indeed.
Loretta Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not think, really, if all this was going on...
Now, if you think about that, what you just said, Chuck, it now creates a contextual framework for that particular meeting she had with Bill Clinton in a private plane
on the tarmac. You bet it does. Now,
again, I'm not saying that there's any evidentiary or documentary linkage back to that, but it starts giving some color and some shape to that and context to that event, which seems so out of place.
Yes. And it does seem... That the Attorney General of the United States is not supposed to be meeting with the husband of somebody who's being investigated
by the Justice
Department for a federal crime.
Right.
That is very obviously has. I mean, there is no question that she violated federal law.
Right.
I mean, that's not even in question. The fact is, she violated Title 19.
Yes,
she used a private email setup to exchange classified information.
Exactly.
And the reason she did it was to avoid congressional oversight.
Right. Which is a felony offense.
It's a felony offense. So these are not facts in question. She did it. The real facts in question is, why did the FBI write an exoneration before they actually looked at the evidence?
And that goes back to our meeting on the tarmac.
It does. Partly.
Partly.
I think that was a don't worry. The squash is on.
And we've got enough foreign help to...
Yes.
To launder the evidence.
Well, they weren't going to launder the evidence. They were going to cover it up with this wave of indignation over Trump colluding with the Russians.
The Russians.
Yeah. It wasn't going to matter anymore. And it was a good thing that they did that. In fact, it was going to be a good thing that it was done, because otherwise Trump would have been president.
And why do you think... Now, let's just... Puzzle me this here, Riddler. Why do you think that the Obama administration personnel, all the people we've named from Loretta Lynch to Comey and everybody else, thought it would have been a good idea to implicate the Russians as part of this mess?
Well, the Russians are perennial bad guys.
That's the one that's obvious, sitting at the front of the shelf.
Well, I can tell you that.
What's sitting in the back of the shelf?
The back of the shelf is that Vladimir Putin hates Hillary Clinton.
Bingo.
Vladimir Putin hates Hillary Clinton.
Political payback.
Yes, it's a payback because Clinton. This interference in our elections. Indignation. We've been interfering in other people's elections for decades. What?
For hundreds of years.
That's what the CIA...
We were interfering in the British Raj back in the 1800s.
Sure we were. But we really got serious about it after World War II.
Yes, we did.
After the creation of the CIA. We got into Vietnam because we fooled around in a Vietnamese election.
Yes, that's right.
And
why is it that we always seem to pick the wrong horse?
We always pick the wrong party. We always seem to do that. But the fact is that the Clinton administration interfered in the elections in Israel in the mid-90s.
Right.
To get, was it Perez elected over Netanyahu?
Shimon Peres.
Shimon Peres. I think it was Perez. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we interfered in British elections to get John Major thrown out and Tony Blair in.
Right, exactly. That's right. Because and remember, then Blair and Clinton came together and started creating this third way initiative.
Third way initiative. And Hillary was the leader of that.
Yes,
thing.
She was, which was the precursor to the Clinton Foundation.
The Clinton Foundation, yes, exactly. The third way initiative basically turned into the Clinton Foundation. Yeah. Folks, Hillary Clinton sent people in to interfere as the State Department head. With and John Kerry continued it, so
yes,
let's
he did.
Not let's
yes,
not
he did.
Not go too far. Just blame it on Hillary. It was the whole Obama administration went in and tried to undermine Putin's efforts to get elected president of Russia.
And they were and if you remember, the relationship between the Obamas and Putin when he won. Was, shall we say, less than cordial.
It was chilly. Yeah.
Because, basically, Putin outplayed them.
Okay. We were playing checkers.
Putin was playing chess.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he had all of his pieces on the board.
Putin is not to be messed with. He's a KGB operative. He didn't get where he is because he's dumb and not a good strategist. He's a great strategist.
And willing to break a few eggs to make a souffle.
Am I saying I really love Vladimir Putin and I think he's a great guy?
No.
No, I think he's a dangerous, frightening oligarch.
Absolutely.
Do I believe that he attempted to have something to do with interfering in American elections? Oh, yeah. Did he collude with Trump to do it? No.
No. But do I believe that the Obama administration personnel and all the people that they started filtering through, including the MI6 operatives, decided that playing Ukraine against Russia and blaming it on Russia was a cute idea? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This thing is starting to crystallize more and more every day.
Yeah.
And really what it's going to get down to is you want to drain the swamp? You may have to drain it right into the federal prison at Leavenworth.
Yeah,
because that looks like it's where a lot of people are going to be going.
I'm going to be quite honest with you. Mueller's a bad player, and he always has been. Why everybody praised him when he got the job, I don't know. He has been a bungler as a federal employee for decades. In fact, he was involved in that whole Whitey Bulger. I'm going to bring up a name.
Way back, brother.
Yeah, back 25 years ago. The whole Whitey Bulger situation in Boston. If you're not familiar with that, I would go out and look up some stuff written by a guy named Howie Carr, C-A-R-R, Howie Carr in the Boston Globe, because Howie Carr kept the whole Whitey Bulger. Whitey Bulger was a gangster.
Right.
And Whitey Bulger was essentially also a federal informant.
Yes, he was.
So what did the bunch in the FBI do? They actually convicted some people who had nothing to do with crimes that Whitey Bulger had been involved in order to keep him. They knew full well that these people had not done these things, and yet they sent them to federal prison, some of them for like 20-plus years, for crimes that Bulger and his minions had done.
Okay, and for those people who don't want to study history books, go to your local DVD store. It's a movie called Black Mass.
Black Mass, yeah, I've heard of that.
It just came out a couple of years ago. It's the Whitey Bulger story. And I believe it's Benedict Cumberbatch is involved in it, and Johnny Depp plays Whitey Bulger.
Well, Whitey Bulger basically got caught, and guess what? Who was involved? Mueller? Mueller was the head of the, I think he was the U.S. attorney.
U.S. attorney at the time, yeah.
At the time, who knew this was going on and ignored it. Also... it was, I can't think of, his
Rudy Giuliani.
No,
because he was New York.
He was New York. His right hand man, can't think of, Mueller's one of the first guys he hired.
I know who you're talking about, but I don't have it in front of me.
Harvey Weinstein keeps coming to mind. That's not who it is.
That's not it.
wrong scandal.
Okay. But we got a little brain freeze there. So,
But some of the other bad players was Rod Rosenstein. I'm not sure in this particular thing, but he's done something similar. All these people that that Mueller has surrounded himself with have been rebuked by federal courts for essentially attempting to railroad defendants by denying them access, in fact, denying the existence of exculpatory evidence, and have had convictions thrown out on that basis. Not because it was, you know, some mild thing. It was completely exculpatory evidence that proved that the people were not guilty of the things that they were accused of and convicted of in federal court. This is the guy you want running the Trump investigation?
Well, of course.
A known fixer?
Of course. Of course, that's who you want running the investigation because you're trying to fix something.
When I hear Trey Gowdy say, oh, I trust him and I trust Mueller. He's a great he was a great U.S. attorney. No, he was not a great U.S. attorney. He should have been disbarred.
Right. Now, I know we're about running out of time here. I do want to bring something up because I saw this come across the newswire today. And I get it from one sense. But from another sense, it's a very troubling thought. A federal judge just ruled, I think yesterday, that Donald Trump cannot block people from his Twitter account.
Yes, I saw that. Because what the ruling basically says is that Twitter is a public forum, a publicly owned forum, essentially.
Yes.
Now.
But are they doing that on the basis that he's a public figure and that, so therefore his Twitter account is a governmental entity? Or are they doing that on the account of they just don't like Donald Trump and they don't feel that he should have rights? Because if you think about it, that could extend to any of us. Let's say you have a Twitter account and you have somebody who's stalking you and you block them. Could they go to court now under this ruling and basically force you to have to accept them commenting and criticizing everything you do all the time?
And in fact, I was listening to someone reading an article online on the air when I was coming in that talked about exactly that. And the person who had been blocked had written this article. And if this person had been on my Twitter and had said some of the things that she said in print about him, I would have blocked him too.
Would have blocked him too, exactly.
Now, the fact is that this is not going to stand on appeal.
Well, of course not, but it's just ridiculous that we have to spend taxpayer dollars because we have federal judges, an Obama appointee, who frankly can't understand the basic rule of law. This goes, it's his Twitter account. It's his personal private property. If he wants to block somebody, he could block everybody on Twitter and just post out there to dead air.
To show you how desperate the anti-Trumpers in the media are.
Yes.
An article came out yesterday that said that Trump was in violation of the law because he kept a cell phone from which he tweeted that wasn't a government, owned and controlled device. And I'm like, that's not the point. If I'm in the office and I'm doing secure communications, I would expect to have to do it on a secure device. He's not doing secure communications.
Okay. But Chuck. That's the, it's okay for me, but for thee, but not for me. Yeah. Because let's put that on its ear. If they're screaming that he can't have a private cell phone to do things outside because it's part of government, then why was Hillary putting classified information on a private server?
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Well, as you noted, we are out of time. And I want to just go into it today to go back full circle to where we started.
Yes.
Folks, give thanks to God for the people he's raised up to sacrifice their lives and their families and their fortunes in many cases and their families' fortunes to protect our way of life. You may be a critic of the way we live and that kind of thing, but the fact is that we have our freedom such as remains, because there are men and women out there who are called to serve and serve. And so give thanks to God that they're out there and thank a veteran. But primarily give thanks to God, because without God, they would not have the strength to do what it is that they do. So,
yes. Well,
remember on Memorial Day, the reason for Memorial Day.
And have a safe and happy Memorial Day weekend. And we hope to have you back here listening to us again next week.
That's right. So, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.